content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Dean Silver from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from a different set of books and magazines, and we will do different articles in each program. And to start today, we have the programs we'll learn about growing things, vegetables, flowers, herbs, and many other plants that can be grown in North Carolina. We will discuss many topics: bird and butterfly gardens, container planting, and garden planting, all kinds of herbs and vegetables and flowers for different seasons in North Carolina. What I will read comes from many magazines and books I have collected. I will give the titles to each as I read the articles. We will start today with getting a vegetable garden going, since it's now May and this is the time. And first, since now is the time for this in North Carolina. The article for this program comes from the Timber Press Guide to Vegetables in the Southeast and is a book by Ira Wallace. This chapter is Welcome to the Southeast and is great information on weather patterns. And first, we will begin with this. And we start with the climate in the southeastern states is warm and wet with long hot summers, high humidity, and mild winters with many rapid changes in temperature. Happily, gardening is a year-round activity in our region. The southeastern states covered in this book spread from the beaches of the Delaware and Maryland's Delmarva peninsulas across the Appalachians to the edge of Oklahoma and all the states south of that line, including the acid states of East Texas. But I will eliminate a lot of this, the material, as I read, and it will be strictly for North Carolina, as in these programs. Our definition of the Southeast largely mirrors the native range of the American holly. This area includes USDA climate zones 6, 7, 8, and 9, with small bits of zone 5 at higher elevations, plus a little zone 10 in middle of Florida and southern Louisiana. We leave the special conditions in the tropical south where it never freezes and the hot, dry, alkaline soils of West Texas to another volume. And that's that author wrote another book for those areas. But as I said, we'll strictly do our areas as I'm reading. The climate zones we refer to throughout this book are based on the map of 10 hardiness zones created by the United States Department of Agriculture in 1960 and most recently updated in 2012. Each zone represents, and they have a Fahrenheit degree, so I will convert for you, and they has represents a minus 13 centigrade difference in minimum winter temperature. The number of freezing days in the southeast has declined by 4 to 7 days per year for most of the region since the mid-70s. And that is, of course, due to climate change. There are many ways of dividing the southeast area and looking at its weather patterns, geography, and soils. For simplicity, the month-to-do lists in this book will refer to two areas, the upper south and the lower south. When looking for best planting dates and other specifics for your garden, it's always good to also consult local resources like your agricultural extension agent, master gardeners, and experienced neighbors, and and, of course, this program. So first we'll do the Upper South, which is part of us, and growing season profile. Like the entire Southeast, states in the Upper South experience long, hot summers, but evenings cool off, especially in the mountainous areas. The temperature can top, 100 degrees Fahrenheit, so that's around 40 centigrade, but usually only for a day or two before relief. Winter lows don't usually drop below 32 centigrade, but an unusually harsh Arctic front can bring lows of minus 20. Well, we've gotten, I guess, in the 20s here. This area includes, and that's us, is zones 6 and 7. Scattered areas of zone 5 at higher elevation, and as well as mountains of North Carolina, South Carolina. And crops like rhubarb, asparagus, raspberries, high bush blueberries, and spring broccoli do better in this region than further south. And now we have lower south, which is zone 8 and 9, and that's eastern North Carolina. This is the land of peaches, Vidalia onions, rabbit eye blueberries, and abundant winter gardens. The warming influence of the Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic Ocean make winters short and summers long, hot, and humid. So we will now go into the average frost dates for the Southeast, which is, we have Fayetteville for around Fayetteville, so it's a little little earlier above us, later above Fayetteville, shorter below Fayetteville, is from 11/5 is the first frost, so that's November 5th, and the last frost is around March 28th. So, and we're ready. So we have 222 frost-free days. So it's we're ready to start planting, and I know I have my garden in right now, so we will talk about putting in your vegetable garden today. This area, the Piedmont area, stretches westward inland from the coastal plains to the edge of the Appalachians and Blue Ridge Mountains. And the summers are hot and humid, and winters are cold with lows from the 20s, but that's Fahrenheit, the 20-degree Fahrenheit. And we'll get that is minus about 32 in the south. So we also have the mountains south, which is the Blue Ridge, which we will talk about too. The growing season there is April to October, and the average winter temperature is from 0 to 32 to about 20. The average for the Piedmont, the average winter temperature is minus 13 to minus 13 to about 30s. All right. So now here we get natural gardening singles. For the start of the nurturing, here it says we'll have signs that we look at is dandelions begin to bloom, then sow your beets and carrots. When the daffodils begin to bloom, that's when you can plant some potatoes. When the forsythia begins to bloom, then you could put your peas in. The red buds begin, then enter expect flea beetles, so it doesn't have any anything to plant at that time. If the lilacs are in full bloom, then put beans, squash, and cucumbers. When the oak leaves are the size of squirrel ears, then put your corn in. Foxgloves begin to bloom, then be careful, bean beetle eggs start hatching. So we'll have to think about that. And also, I was going to try and keep this show with no chemicals. So we'll try and keep organic gardening during this show. But if it gets too difficult, because we do have a lot of bugs in North Carolina, we may try and get some organic chemicals. And it does say fall dead nettle shoots emerge when then you start your spinach. But now we'll go to the chapter on gardening 101. Until the 1950s, most families in the Southeast had a large vegetable garden. Today, most people live in cities or suburbs, and that means plots are smaller. But according to Southern Living magazine, we Southerners still garden more than any other Americans. You don't need a large space to begin a vegetable garden. If you have use containers, you don't even need a yard. But you do need three critical elements to have your garden produce abundantly: sun, soil, and water. And if you use containers, that's a very good way to put them on a deck. And that way, even the little bunny rabbits will not get to them. And the sun here. Sunlight is the fuel for plant growth. If you want to grow a wide variety of vegetables, including tomatoes, peppers, and others that produce fruit, you need at least 6 to 8 hours of full sunlight each day between the spring and fall equinox. 10 hours is needed to bring out the full flavor of many large heirloom tomatoes. If there is any doubt, observe and measure how much sun you have. It's so discouraging to have all the work of starting a new garden only to find your spot is too shady for what you want to grow. Because of the high summer temperatures in the Southeast, morning light and afternoon shade are better if you have a choice when choosing the location of your garden. With 4 to 6 hours of full sunlight a day, you can grow good lettuce, arugula, cilantro, and other greens such as spinach, kale, collards, and cabbage. Both broccoli and cauliflower are actually modified flowers and need the same light as fruiting vegetables. Root crops need at least 6 full hours of sun to produce what you want. Except for parsley and mint, most common herbs also need a well-drained location with full sun. If you only have enough hours of sunlight in fall and winter, when the trees are bare, consider concentrating on cool season crops. It may even be best to have your summer garden in a different location than your fall and winter garden. Adequate sunlight is one of the most critical elements in the success of your garden. And while, yes, enough sunlight is crucial, too much sunlight and heat in late summer can be brutal. So in the Deep South, some crops like sweet peppers, tomatoes, and chard benefit from shade late in the day in midsummer. We plant lettuce so that taller plants growing to the west and south provide shade. Planting tomatoes where dappled shade reaches them at about 4 p.m., seems to help with fruit set in August. Even in the Upper South, many tomatoes, bell peppers, lima beans, and snap beans may stop producing fruit for a short time during the summer. when the temperature soars above the 100s. Pollen is killed, and the stigma, female receptacle for the pollen, dries up. This is only a temporary setback, so don't pull up the plants. They will probably fruit again when the temperature drops. Duck the intense August heat by growing an early season and a late season of quicker maturing varieties. You'll still have the real heat lovers like okra, southern peas, and watermelons, Malabar spinach, and hot peppers to give you something to do during the hottest months. We'll cover more detail of planning and locating your garden in the next chapter. And now we're going to a topic. It's called soil. Healthy soil is more than just plain old dirt. It is a complex and living mixture of materials, organic material, which was once alive, such as leaves and roots, humus, decayed organic matter, water, microorganisms, and other animals. Plant roots also need air to breathe, and it is the structure of your soil that creates those breathing spaces, which are every bit as important as all that other stuff in the soil. Except for sunlight and carbon dioxide, plants get everything they need from the soil. Build up healthy soil in your garden, and that soil will give you great plants. Gardens in the Southeast typically have either sandy or clay-rich soils. And I know I have clay, and I just realized now from reading this that I should have mixed it with something else, but maybe next year. Both are subject to drought. Heavy clay soils can be as hard as concrete, often have lost their topsoil, and pose a formidable challenge to successful cultivation. This soil is often iron-rich, leading to a distinctive red coloration and the common name red clay. They are mostly quite acidic and require lime. Clay soil has a large percentage of fine particles, leaving very little room for air space. It compacts easily, doesn't drain well, and sets like a brick in the summer heat. However, your average clay soil is very fertile and just needs to be loosened up a bit to allow tender roots to work their way down in there. Regularly adding organic material, leaves, compost, and cover crops will improve drainage, helps create air spaces, and makes a better home for beneficial soil microbes that actively help maintain soil fertility. The coarse, partially decomposed organic particles act like wedges, temporarily creating air spaces, and the fully decomposed humus is sticky and acts like glue to clump the clayey soil together into larger aggregates, increasing pore space. Over time, this increases soil oxygen levels and improves soil drainage, which in turn increases the rooting depth so roots can reach more water and nutrients. Sandy or rocky soils are low in organic material matter and nutrients because water drains through them so quickly. Bare sandy soils are prone to erosion. When you improve these soils, organic material lodges between the grains of sand and acts like a sponge holding water and increasing nutrient availability. Scattered throughout the Southeast, there are areas of rich, deep soils with lots of organic matter that are excellent for agriculture. The fertile Pamunkey loams near Jamestown in Virginia produced the food that sustained the early European settlers in the area. The Pamunkey and other Indian tribes were the first people to recognize the natural ability of this soil to produce abundant food. In recent years, these same soils have produced record yields of corn and wheat. Healthy, balanced, loamy soils like the Pamunkey are full of microorganisms, our little friends that turn organic material into humus. The spongy humus holds water, materials, minerals, and other nutrients in a liquid soup and makes them easily available to plants. Rich natural soils take hundreds, if not thousands, of years to form and can be lost quickly to flood or poor management. If you should be blessed with such perfect soil, don't count on it lasting unless you work in to maintain it with the regular additions of organic material and other nutrients as needed. Good soil is a work in progress. Compost, here's an article on compost. Well, it's a part of the book. With our long growing season, high rainfall, and warm temperatures, gardeners in the southeast need to work a little harder with those in the north to replenish the organic material removed with our abundant vegetable harvests. Think about all those baskets of greens, corn, beans, and tomatoes that your soil grows and then you haul away. An annual spreading of 1 to 2 inches of compost will provide all the nutrients most crops need for excellent growth and help improve soil structure. In the South, composting is the single best thing you can do for your soil. And we'll learn more about that in our when we read the March chapter, which will come in a few more programs. And here's things about water. Adequate moisture is essential for healthy plant growth. And here in the southeast, we're blessed with ample moisture throughout much of the year. However, drought in the hottest months is also a predictable reality. So locate your garden near a reliable source of water. Plants need water to carry nutrients and keep their tissues hydrated. Even short dry periods can stunt plant growth, reducing yields dramatically. With landscape plants, you can select varieties that require less water, but choices for low-water vegetable plants are limited. Thankfully, there are simple ways you can increase water efficiency, and here are some of those tips. Create windbreaks. Plant bamboo or build semi-permeable fences using shade cloth. This reduces evaporation from leaves and soil. Apply mulch. Shredded leaves, pine needles, or other organic mulches keep the soil cool and help it retain moisture from rain and irrigation. Improve your soil. Incorporating organic matter into your soil increases water holding capacity and improves soil structure. Compost, animal manure, grass clippings, cover crops, and leaf mold are common ways to increase organic material. Plant in blocks. Planting in squares instead of rows creates a canopy of leaves that shades the ground and reduces evaporation. Check plant needs before watering. Vegetable plants should be watered according to need, not on a schedule. And water at the right time of day. Watering at night or early in the morning, thus avoiding the hottest part of the day, reduces water loss and diseases as well. And set up an efficient irrigation system. Switching from a sprinkler to a drip or soaker hose can reduce water usage for up to 50%. And I did buy a soaker hose. They're not expensive. And they say they put out a gallon of water every half hour. So that's a good deal to put up soaker hoses around the plants so that it always stays on the bottom of the plants and not doesn't water the leaves, which is sometimes very good to prevent the germs and diseases from building up. In our fantasy garden, we'll continue with the book, nature provides rain when needed in the perfect amount. Alas, in reality, you'll often have to help nature along by watering by hand or with an irrigation system. How often you need to water depends on how often it rains, how long your soil retains moisture, how fast water evaporates in your garden, and sometimes even whether your plants are in a critical growth stage. Soil type is another important factor. Clay soils hold water very well, sometimes too well. Sandy soil, on the other hand, acts like a sieve, letting the water run right through. Happily, the amount of water stored in any soil can be improved with generous additions of organic matter and mulch. When drought hits your garden, it's also hitting your whole region. For gardeners using municipal water, there are often restrictions on watering during the hottest months. Storing water for use during dry periods is not a new idea in our region. As recently as the early 20th century, rainwater was the primary water source of many Texas ranches with stone and steel cisterns still standing today on homesteads long converted to well water. A water shortage resistance of sorts is happening in Texas, Georgia, Florida, and other drought-challenged states in the Southeast as gardeners are waking up to the potential of water literally falling from the sky. Encouraged by the City of Austin's incentive program, homeowners in that city have installed more than 6,000 rain barrels. Each can be filled by a brief cloudburst and save hundreds of gallons of water. Well, that's going to end our program today, and we've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. But be sure to listen next time, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Dean Silver, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. And we will continue with this book and many more books and magazines in our next programs. Hope you'll be listening. Thank you.